Welcome here today. I see there's a number of board members here. Welcome, but we're going to be addressing teachers here this morning. This is sort of for teachers. Then this afternoon, I believe this session runs again very similarly, and I'm actually going to be talking off of the same set of notes, okay? So just full disclosure, if you come to the board thing this afternoon, it's going to be pretty similar, but just the same coin, opposite side, right? And so you choose what you want to do with that. The board actually said that they thought it might be good if the planning board actually said it might be good if the board members were sitting in with the teachers for whatever reasons. Think that one through. I know we're conditioned for handouts at things like this, and I don't have a handout, but I felt so badly about this that I thought we would pass around a cup. And if you want a pen, you may have a pen. And we would pass around this. If you want a tablet, you may have a tablet, right? But that's all I have by way of handouts today, right? But I do want this session to be one where you just sort of maybe sit quietly and think and be reflective on your own behavior, right? I've heard it said that things look different when you're on the board. And I've heard it said too, well, things look different when you're a teacher. Both are true. Very true. I've worn both hats. I know there's validity in both statements. There is some inherent tension between those two perspectives. But my primary goal here is not to give a list of how to or what to do. It seems to me that, and I'm sure you agree, that school and its relationships are that multifaceted, that complex, that for me to say, do this and do that, check this box and so on, that's not where we're going to go, okay? It's just probably not going to fit. Rather, I'd like to take more of an overarching general perspective here that goes along the lines of, Wilcox's poem about the set of the sails. If I can recite that poem. One ship drives east, another west. By the selfsame wind that blows, 'tis the set of the sails and not the gales that determines where they go. Right. The next stanza is less familiar to me. Like the winds of the sea are the ways of fate as we journey along through life, 'tis the set of the soul that decides the goal and not the calm or the strife. We like to work today at the setting of the sail. Okay, fair enough. I'd like to start with a maybe rather lengthy introduction, I don't know. And then I'd like to give 5 or 6 drops of oil. We know about oil. And then I'd like to finish with 2 squirts. All right. So when I say, here's another drop, that's the thing that would be on the handout if we had a handout. Okay. So starting first of all with the introduction, a few observations about teachers and teacher development. And like I said, today I'm going to be speaking with teachers. Board, if you're here to eavesdrop, fine. But remember, maybe some teachers will be eavesdropping when I'm talking to you. Haha. About teacher development and board interactions. When we first started teaching school, the board could hardly tell us enough. If they could tell us where to store the balls, where the balls and playground equipment get stored, we were happy for that information. We licked it up. Because we somehow sensed correctly that our survival depended on it, right? And but today anymore, we're the ones that are changing those locations so that school flows better, right? Teachers develop. We change, and our needs for what we're actually looking to the board for changes. And that's something I didn't realize about myself until I crashed into it and began to realize, hey, something is changing here, okay? Most teachers never really get out of the stage of needing the board and needing it rather badly, because in our circles, the average teacher teaches 3.3 years, according to my research, right? And by that time, you haven't mastered the art of teaching yet, really. So it follows then that this challenge comes after we begin to develop some confidence, right? And I eventually believe that all teachers come to this point. Teachers want to be cared for, they want to be understood, and they want to be lightly governed by strong governments. I think that's about where all of us settle out to, right? I'm not going to talk about being cared for. That's simple enough, low-hanging fruit, right? I'm not going to talk about being understood, but I do want to develop this idea just a little bit that we want to be governed, lightly governed, by strong governments. We teachers want the board to be there. We want it to be there good and strong when we need them, right? We like the taps on the shoulder. We like the whispers in the ear. And we especially like when they head off with a parent, right? Let's just be open and honest about this. All right, we like when they can avoid train wrecks, but we don't want to be smothered by a board, okay? We really don't. Remember your father? You wanted him to be big and strong. You wanted him to be able to do things that you wanted him to be able to do. You wanted him to appear invincible, right? But when he dealt with you, well, that needed to be with tenderness, right? We want the policemen that are out there big enough with enough heft to stop the neighborhood bully, right? But we want him to also be able to hoist a little lost lad on his shoulder that got lost at the county fair and help him find his parents. That's a strong government, lightly governing, right? Tenderness and so on. We want a church that knows in considerable detail what it believes, how it practices its beliefs, able to ferret out error, trounce it before it ferrets out and trounces us, right? But when that church authority deals with us, well, we have some expectations. Teachers are normal folk. People everywhere like to be lightly governed by strong governments, right? That's about the way humanity works. And I think that actually is the way God designed us, and that's the way God relates to us when you stop and think about it, isn't it? That God relates to us with, he lightly governs people, right? But he has plenty of authority. He says tenderly, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, and so on. I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest to your souls. But it turns out that's only the one half of God and the way he relates to people. Here's a thank you note from one teacher to his school board chairman. And I think it makes complete sense on the backdrop of what we've been talking about. Thanks so much. This is an actual note. Thanks so much for listening in faculty meetings to my dilemma about what to do with 7th and 8th grade history. Oh, you need the context. The year was running out long before the book was. Thanks so much for listening in faculty meeting to my dilemma about what we should do in 7th and 8th grade history. You asked, do you have any ideas about what you could do about it? I said, sure, I have ideas. You replied, pick one and do it. Surprised, I said, which one? You said, simple, the best one. I asked, why aren't you telling me what to do? You never answered me directly. Instead, you looked at the other teachers at that staff meeting and said, that's what we need around here, teachers. People who can identify the problem and do what it takes to fix it without anyone else telling them what to do about it. I see now that you were pushing me on. Thanks for that push. Right. I'd like to talk now a little bit about the nature of boards. Talked a little bit about some of the nature of teachers. Boards govern the schools while they themselves are absent, right? You don't want it to be otherwise, right? I've had sometimes board meetings that came into the floor of my classroom, and it was not a pleasant experience. We'll move on. Boards, by their nature, are policymakers, right? Because they're sort of governing in their absence, right? So a board discusses a teacher's issues, and they take action along the line of some sort of policy, right? They might not call it a policy, but they come back with a recommendation, which means it's something you jolly well better do, right? That's the way boards work, and that's okay. I mean, how else are they going to work, right? So if there's a struggle to relate well, this tension between teachers and boards, it's sort of couched in that phenomena a bit, I think. Right, what a teacher is that stays in the classroom more than that 3.3 number is they're a little bit strong-minded. All right, we wouldn't want it any other way. If you weren't that way, you'd be flipping pepperonis on our pizzas for a living. All right, so when you present something to the board and they come back with a policy of some sort, you're going to have an opinion about that. Okay, we're just saying. That's what we're going to be doing this workshop. We're going to just say. So what this behooves you to do is be a bit judicious about what you bring to the board and how you bring it, right? Your ability has changed, and so recognize that the areas that you need help have changed, right? And so if you relate the same way that you always have and are asking, where do we store the balls around here? Is there a ball pump? Instead of going and just buying the thing outright, right? You're giving all sorts of conflicting messages to your school board. And they're still going to be the policymakers that they always were at heart. I mean, at nature. I mean, at, you know what I mean. I'm just saying. Right? There was once a mom's little three-year-old boy who locked himself in the bathroom. Right? Really a bad situation, because the three-year-old, at three-year-old age, you know, you tend to go ballistic when you're running up against things. We heard about that thing of going up walls. Well, he tried that and it didn't work. Well, the mom also was of the nature that went up walls when things went bad. And so she called 911 and she got the fire department. And the big swarthy fire department, firefighter men were there with their fire axes or whatever, says, do you want the boy out? She said, of course, that's why I called you. And the door came down and the boy came out and everybody was happy until dad came home. This is a true story, right? And the dad calls the mayor and says, rah, 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 bathroom door, rah, 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 right? And the mayor says, hey, we have a civil court, go for it. Maybe not the best response. So it went to court. And the judge threw out the case on the premise that there was other options for the mom to call, like a locksmith. Had she called a locksmith, she would have got a slightly balding man with, you know, bifocals and a bag of small tools to coax locks. But instead what she got was, right? Boards tend to use the one tool that they have in their toolbox. And it's not really their fault. Right? It's by nature who they are. And it's the way it will be. And it's what we actually want. You don't want to be a Christopher Dock, just saying. Okay, that's the end of the introduction. I'm going to go now to drops of oil for the gears, and I think that you understand why I'm talking about oil and drops. And so on drop number one, these are things that I think can help in our relationships. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. This means that you're going to have to listen more than you talk. It means that you're going to have to wave in the other party to speak first. Many years ago, when I was in fourth grade, somebody came into our school by invitation of our teacher, and they showed us slides of where they had gone traveling. I don't remember anymore where it was, but I do remember just the real, just the pleasure of, enjoying those slides together. So when I was teaching my first year, I thought, well, if I'm going to give my students the same pleasure that I received at school, it would be okay to, you know, get someone in sometime to show slides. You know what slides are? Back there. So sure enough, somebody went traveling, and sure enough, they had a reel of slides, and sure enough, they said they could come into school and show those things to my class. So everything was fine. I needed one more thing yet, and that was, you know, the school board approval. And so I checked with the school board, and they said no. Again, that was what they had always said to my ideas so far that year. It's what they said to my beanbag chair request, my hot dog racing contest plans, my cherry spitting seed contest, and large to show texture, right? Cereal boxes do it. But you get the idea. I was feeling like they were, no, 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 right? That's the way it was feeling to me, right? And here they did it again. To something, I knew I was on to something good, because I was not that far from fourth grade myself. And I remembered, right? I don't know how it came about, but somehow I listened a little bit in my distress. And what I found out is the patrons of that school, some of the patrons of that school were not far removed from a no photography stance background. And that's why the board said no. And that's what I learned from listening. Right? I'm just suggesting that we listen. We seek first to understand, then to be understood. What I was in the process of learning is that I needed to understand the other person first, right? And eventually I was at the point where I could process a larger concept, and that is that some of the parents were viewing me as a progressive simply because of my background compared to their background. And so I needed to understand that concept if I was going to effectively serve them, right? Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Your board can help you understand. You see, that's the suggestion here. Drop two. I'm hoping to go quickly enough that you get the point, but we have some time for discussion. Okay. So drop two, play the string you can. Play the string you can, your own. It's difficult to change yourself, have you noticed that? But it's even more difficult to change the other person, right? Resist the urge to even fantasize about this. That is changing the other guy, right? It isn't really going to happen, right? But you can fantasize all you want to. Lay in bed at night, awake, roll this way and that way, and think about how you would be if you could be different, right? That's a good thing to think about. At one point, another story. I shared my grievance with our principal about one of the team members, and he did a great job listening. He checked the first box. He did a great job listening, and the reason I know he did a great job listening is because he came back the next day, and he said, I heard you say thus and so and thus and so. I heard you say that, we'll call him George, needs change. And he said, you know what? He said, I agree with that. He said, George is involved in a lot of self-defeating behaviors right now. Wow, did I like the sound of that, right? Because I thought, now we have the spotlight where it needs to be, right? And also, I knew that I was heard. And it felt good, right? But then what he said next, here came the blow. He said, Jonathan, you have need of a word that begins with the letter P. Yes. He said, you have need of patience. He said, you probably have noticed that you have some behaviors that if you would be able to get rid of, you would probably be more effective. I was like, a few, yeah. He said, how hard is it? How easy is it to affect personal change? That's tough. Well, he said, it's going to be a whole lot harder for you to try to change George. Right. And he was right. Change is hard work, and it gets harder when you get older. You see, George was old enough to be my father. Right, and he had been practicing these self-defeating behaviors. George, self-defeating behaviors. See what happens? Okay, we fixate on the other guy when we would much better fixate on ourselves, and that's tough. That's a tall order. But if you're going to be a mature individual, in fact, if you're going to be functioning as a disciple of Jesus Christ, that's what you need to do. It's what we need to do. Right. He was telling me the same thing I'm trying to tell you. Play the string you can, your own. Closely related is this idea is owning your part of the problem. Just owning your part of the problem. Listen to this perspective. We're going to zoom in on a specific again so that we can zoom out, right? We're trying to adjust the sails here today. Okay, so zoom in. I went to Missoula today. The traffic was terrible. I couldn't make any progress. I was late for my appointment. Something is systemically wrong with the streets and the people of Missoula. Everyone was impatient and making a big mess. People are terrible these days. Perspective one. Perspective two. I went to Missoula today. I helped make a big traffic jam. Because I chose to go at rush hour, I merely contributed to the congestion in my own small way, making myself and others late for appointments. I helped make a big mess. One way we can easily identify. The other one, it's hard. We don't talk that way. We don't think that way. But should we? Could we? What if the world had more thinkers like that? What if I could be one of them? What might that do for my relationships? Another situation. So let's say I'm carrying my favorite cup of coffee and my favorite mug. I have both. And I'm carrying it to my desk and I get run into and my coffee flies everywhere. All right? What happened there? Well, I can say to the question, why? I can say, well, because I was bumped, duh. Because we have little kids running around here all over the place that aren't polite, blah, 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 blah. Or I can say, because there was coffee in my cup. Or I can say, because I did not have the proper mug to carry it in. Right? Take your pick. Why wasn't the Kool-Aid went flying all over the place? Why wasn't the water went flying all over the place? Well, because I put coffee in my cup, right? And when we have these interactions with other people, we bump and coffee flies all over the place. Maybe it's because there's coffee in your cup, right? I'm not talking to 10-year-olds or 20-year-olds, right? You understand what I'm saying, right? What's in your cup? What flies all over the place when you get bumped? Perspective. It will feel like you need to take 80% of the blame when you have problems with other primates. But just go ahead and take 80% of the blame. The dad of one of the teachers of whom I was on the board when they were teaching told me, I sort of checked up with the dad, you know, Your daughter's okay with what happened here this year. Is she going to be okay? You know, type of thing. He said, well, said this year she learned that she needs to take 80% of the blame. He said it didn't feel fair, but I think she's a better person for it. And he's right. He's right. Take 80% of the blame. It doesn't seem like it even could logically be more than 50% our fault. But what would it be like if your team had the perspective that I'm willing to take 80% of the blame. Right. Well, do we want to get along better with other people or don't we? All right, drop number three. And that is simply this, be quick to apologize. Be quick to apologize. Have you needed to apologize for anything in the last school year? How about in the last 2 weeks? Well, if not, I congratulate you. You are perfect. At least you believe so, right? Truly everyone messes up. For most of us, it's a common thing to need to make apology. And I'm just suggesting that maybe I don't make apology as often as I should. I would just like to mention that interactions are precarious. It is easily possible to cause unintentional harm in these things. And then we have to take our 80%, right? And part of that is by making apology. I think there's a lot of poor apologies being made these days, and it sounds a little like this. I'm sorry if you felt, right? Or we tell a story. We go to apologize, and we tell this story about all the things that went into making me feel irritable. And we explain how all the coffee was in our cup, you know. I'd like to just give 4.5 tips from how to apologize successfully from the book Sorry, Sorry, Sorry. The case for good apologies, right? So tip number one is actually say I'm sorry. Just say I'm sorry or I apologize. Saying those words is really, I think, a non-negotiable in any decent apology, big or small. Avoid the terms I regret that or I really feel bad about what happened. Now you're actually fishing for sympathy. Like, just get it out on the table. I'm making an apology. I'm sorry, right? That keeps the focus where it really needs to be. Talking about how to make a good apology. Secondly, name specifically the infraction that you're apologizing for. Explicitly saying what you're apologizing for. Well, that helps for you to take accountability and say that, look, I have actually framed my part of the situation and I'm sorry for what is inside this frame. Okay? Don't make excuses. Don't justify. Don't tell us a story. Only explain what's absolutely necessary for your infraction. And then thirdly, say what you're going to do to ensure that it won't happen again, if you can. Right? Describe how you're not going to do it again, such as, I'll set a reminder on my phone so I don't miss the faculty meeting or whatever it is. Or, I won't use that language again. Or, I'm enrolled in therapy now. Whatever. Okay, but somehow get it on the table. This is what I'm going to do. Right? It's not enough to say I'm taking responsibility for my actions. It's much better to say how you're going to take responsibility for your actions. And then fourthly, offer to fix what's broken. Of course, it's difficult to fix broken relationships. It's not applicable in all situations. Making up for a new deed, yes, it can look like buying the thing that was ruined, that white rug. But maybe you need to go so far, or I need to go so far as saying I'm going to publicly tell, or I'm going to publicly correct the mistake, you know, that I made. So if, you know, if we're working in a student, in the student body, and you've had some, I'm back to now, between staff members, and you kind of run the other teacher down in front of the rest of your students, well, then it would make sense that in front of your students, you would apologize for what you've just done, right? That would be a way of actually fixing what's broken, and we can actually fix more than we thought we could maybe right at first if we really stop and think about it. And now for the half tip. Half tip, because it's not actually part of the script of the apology per se, but it needs to be a part of behavior, and that is listen without defense. And we're back again to the previous point. But since I'm quoting from the book, Sorry, 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 I wanted you to know what that half tip was. It comes about and says it again. Listen without defense. The point isn't really more about the incident. It's more about their experience, their emotions, and not yours. Some have said it this way: when you're on the anvil, don't be the hammer. When you're on the anvil, don't be the hammer. In other words, when you are experiencing the heat and when people are trying to shape you or get you to move in a certain direction, just lie there, be still, be quiet, and take it. You can decide later whether or not you're going to stay permanently bent out of shape or whether you have been shaped better. You can decide that later. But don't try to be the hammer, right? Hammer fights are not fun. They're not pretty. And they shouldn't really be among us, but unfortunately they are. And sometimes in my, I don't know, you tell me if it's my saner moment or my more dour moment or if I'm becoming a crotchety old man, I'm not sure. But sometimes I wonder if our schools are, if they're going to have four flat tires, if it's not going to be on relationship issues. It's going to be because we know how to swing hammers. Yeah. I'm scared about that, actually. Right, where schools see, if our schools will cease to exist, it might not be because the government came in with a bush hog and mowed us down. I think it may be because we mowed ourselves down. All right, drop four. And we are going to have some time for discussion, I believe. Beware of making the thing a moral issue. This really ups the ante. Sometimes we're having a discussion about should we do this or should we do that, and people start quoting verses. And it's good to quote verses, don't get me wrong. One of the things that all COE reps encounter sooner or later is whether or not you should take daily grades. And did you know that this is really a hot issue, right? And I have I've been to various communities and heard people quoting verses for taking grades and people quoting verses for not taking grades. And both of them are really sincere, and both of them, mind you, have the moral high ground. This is important when you want to win an argument. You want to find the moral high ground. Drive stakes. Use scriptures. Trot them out loudly, emphatically. This is why we should take daily grades, or why we should not take daily grades. Do you ever do that? Pardon?
I said, what are the scriptures?
What are the scriptures?
I might need them sometime.
That's why we're not saying. Folks, just remember that at the end of the day, how he blows his nose, or what vacuum cleaner you should buy, or what time the school trip departure date time should be. All right, keep it on the right plane. And that's not a moral one. All right, let's go to drop five. Beware of the elder brother syndrome. You know the story well. You know, the prodigal son, right? Well, maybe it should be the story of the elder brother. Those of us who are getting a little bit older in life, we're tending to identify, I think we should begin to identify more with the elder brother and less with the younger brother. You see, the younger brother was doing the things that young people do. They wrestle with the devil. Right, he had his pockets full of money, he had lusts of his youth, and he jolly well put those two things together and made a mess of things, right? He wrestled with the devil and lost. Those of us, when we get a little bit older, begin to wrestle with God. And we wonder, how is it that the younger brother gets to be in the father's house and gets that savory meat and gets the party, right? Now, where does this relate? Well, the parable ends with a chilling situation with the one who didn't have it all put together. The younger son was, at the end of the day, inside the father's house, while the one with the moral high ground that we were talking about was outside the father's house getting invited in and wouldn't come. I have acted like the older brother. I'll just, full disclosure, I've acted like the older brother when we're having relationship issues. Right? An essential of discipleship is simply this. It's mellowness. It's forgiveness. It's meekness. It's yieldedness. If you want it in one word, you call it Galassenheit. That's what it is. Right? I sometimes fear, again, that if our schools are going to be on this, fall apart, it's going to be on the point of this lack of Galassenheit. How are we responding to the invitation of Jesus? Restfulness, it's still there. I can see it on the board. You heard it. The invitation of Jesus is, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Right? Take my yoke upon you, learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. Right? That is not just for the initial invitation of Jesus Christ to a person who has spent it all and wrestled with the devil and lost. That is an invitation to people who are wrestling with God as mature individuals. Rest results from a meek and lowly heart. Right? The rest, this is the rest that the elder brother was missing out on and the younger brother was reveling in. And that's where the story closes. Kind of sad, really, isn't it? It was because of a lack or maybe a complete absence of meekness and lowliness. Could it be that the majority of our issues could be fixed with these five little drops of oil? Could it be? All right, we're going to the squirts now, and it's soon your turn. Squirt one, keep talking. Keep communication lines open. There's nothing that can replace or should replace face-to-face open communication. Do it by text. It's going to get ugly. It's going to be misunderstood. Sooner or later, texting can be wonderful if kept in its place. But keep open, honest, face-to-face communication based on the principles of mutual appreciation and respect. If I'd have a handout, I'd have that phrase on there somewhere. Mutual appreciation and respect. Meditate or medicate whatever needs be done with that phrase. We need it. Mutual appreciation and respect. I like that phrase. Mutual appreciation and respect requires communication. You can't live without it. And we need to keep talking. We need to keep talking nicely to each other. Right? Remember, communication doesn't really... well, let's say it this way. Truth stands on its own two feet. I can say 2 plus 2 equals 4. Or I can say 2 plus 2 equals 4. I can wildly flail a banner and say 2 plus 2 equals 4. At the end of the day, it's the same truth. Right? Squirt two. Maintain perspective. You've lost my aim tag. That's how sincere I am, folks. About my truth. Maintain perspective. And that is, I would simply just ask this question for perspective. Let's spool out 30 years ahead. Okay? The issue that is causing me grief today, even, let's just suppose that the issue that's causing us grief today, let's suppose that there is lasting damage. Really and truly, identifiable 30 years later, lasting damage. We're talking about perspective. Maybe that's the first question. Will there really be lasting damage from this? Right? Where I was really going with this, though, is more the idea, what kind of lasting damage is in your community from a mistake 30 years ago? Or we could say, what kind of lasting damage is in your life from a mistake 30 years ago? 40 years ago, I was in school, and there were mistakes made. I'm sure they were. There are mistakes. People are walking around somewhere on this big earth that could refer to mistakes that happened when I was in school. Right? Now, where is the collateral damage? Where is that? Where is the damage? Is it among relationships? Or is it among the integrity of the school? You see, teachers, we're very concerned about the integrity of the school, right? We're aligned towards achievement tests, towards students being on task, towards all this stuff that makes school go around and jolly well needs to be present in any good school, right? But where's the lasting damage going to be? If there's lasting damage, is it going to be about the integrity of the school, or is it going to be on relationships? I don't like either choice, but if given the choice, what would you choose? You'd choose to have the damage in relationships. Okay, I didn't make my question clear. You're saying what we're all thinking, right? We want the, let's not have the damage among relationships, right? Let the damage be that maybe we didn't get our academic goals met. But anybody looking on can jolly well say, behold how they love one another. It says one more thing here. Open discussion. Your turn. Right, it's open to open discussion.
And it was back here where you were talking about board and your introduction about boards being in general policymakers. And you said experienced teachers maybe if the fireman's gonna bring his axe, mm-hmm. maybe call the locksmith. Mm-hmm. Were you hinting that sometimes an experienced teacher would not inform the board of situations where they know policy will be the result and that's not the, the desired outcome? You just wouldn't take it to the board then at all, or did I, am I reading too much into your example?
I'm afraid you heard me correctly. Especially ladies. You just want to be heard. You don't always want to be fixed. And men, if you know what the right thing is to do, I don't know of a school board out there that doesn't want you to do it.
Yeah, you remember there's a key on top of the door. Maybe it could be used.
The bathroom door. There was a key on top of the door. You can stick it in and go, and you have to neither call the fire company or the locksmith.
That's right.
That's called being a teacher, right? And that's really what boards want. Right. Now, I am not saying that you run yourself into the corner and then say, well, I was a WFTI and they blitz, you told me this and blitz. I'm talking to mature thinking individuals.
I ran into it last year where I brought an issue and they made a conclusion that I didn't necessarily agree with. I understood it. So I went ahead and implemented it. And at the next board meeting, I was pretty strongly rebuked because I had gone ahead with this thing and it hadn't been finalized. And I was going ahead on the board. So I think communication is key, and the thing of apologizing and being willing to say, you know what, I'm terribly sorry. It wasn't what I thought. I thought I was doing what you asked me to do. Mm-hmm. And taking even 100% of the blame for what seems to be idiocy, whatever.
Idiocy. Whatever, I don't know. Something like that.
It just solved the problem there, mm-hmm. and we could go on. Mm-hmm. Things like that are stressful, just for me, very stressful, kind of painful. They call it blame.
It's very stressful to have. You know, we are dedicated as teachers. We're dedicating our lives. We're dedicating, you know, so much time, effort, and we know the nuances of our classroom, we know the nuances of our school, and then a board sits down some evening when they really don't want to be there and they want to be home, and they want to, they're making a policy, and they might not consider everything, right? And that has been some of the most challenging times in my teaching career, when we have this is a recommendation or a policy or whatever thing, you know, what you got to do. The board comes back with what you got to do, and they're missing something. Just like you said, there is something in which it is potentially or almost certainly fatally flawed, in that it will not work. Then what do you do? Well, I guess you refer to, if you need those oil, right? I guess listen a little bit more and whatever else, right?
I think one approach the board can use too is try it, see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, this is what you gotta do.
Right. I can think of times when I've been on the board and it felt really, really bad, but we have held our ground. And we said, this is really what you need to do. And it's really, really nice when you have teachers that have enough humility that actually take your policy and find out that, oh, it worked.
This may not be very much important, so you want me to just say it, but it's not. But you mentioned that you don't actually want to be a Christopher Don. Mm-hmm. What were you referring to?
Well, he was a successful teacher, but he had to go it alone. Mm-hmm. He had no backing of anybody. He was a lone ranger. That's what I meant. Mm-hmm. You don't actually want to be a lone ranger. And sometimes maybe we need to remind ourselves of that. I'm sure you could do well, but you will burn out, and the next time I meet you, you will be like the edges of bacon that have been too in the heat too long.
Crispy and crusty.
It's not we cut off and just push off to the side because it got too crispy and crusty and crotchy.
Maybe just a point to that point. So I think though that we can pretty easily get to the point that we envy Christopher Dot when things get difficult, and we say, you know what, I would rather go this alone. And a teacher in that position isn't very good material for the next term. In other words, we need to sit down and say, look, I know I can't do it alone.
Yeah.
I wish I could right now because I don't like where things are going. Yeah. So help me God.
Amen.
Answer.
So that's where it is. So help me God. You know, I struggle with that some in my life. You know, I have a job, and you know, sometimes this job really becomes upsetting and nasty and messy. Or I have this school, and sometimes the school really becomes nasty and upsetting and messy. Or I have this congregation, and sometimes it becomes really upsetting and messy, right? That's human relationships, right? But then rather than... Well, it's that thing of the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, right? I look over the fence, if only I could teach like Christopher Dot taught, right? The grass is not greener on the other side of the fence, folks. The grass is greener wherever you what? Water it, right? So we've been given this nice little plot of grass this year. You have the whole yard. Water it. Water it, for God's sake, water it. Thank you for your help. You're excused.